The three pure collective precepts must be accepted for the three, after the three treasures. These are cease from evil, do only good, and do good for others. Now, these three actually enclose the ten. Cease from evil, do only good, and do good for others. It is easy to recognize that one should not kill, covet, steal. Better get them in the right order. Kill, steal, covet. Say that which is untrue. Sell the wine of delusion. Speak against others. Be proud of yourself. Be mean in giving dharma and wealth. Suffering from anger. And debase or insult the three treasures. It is easy to recognize what these things mean, including drinking the wine of delusion, which is listening to what other people have to say that is wrong and going along with it, which is very heady stuff periodically. It's easy to understand that. What you have to understand, however, is the meaning of the three pure precepts. Cease from evil, do only good, and do good for others. And this is where responsibility enters into it. Before I do any major act, and frequently, before I any do any small one that is going to affect another person, I settle down and literally sit in meditation and ask myself those three questions. Am I ceasing from evil if I do this? And if I get a yes, then I'll go on to, am I doing good and nothing else? And if I can get a yes to that, then I can go on to the next one. In what I'm about to do, am I going to do good for others? I have to get a yes to all three, or I have to go take it back to the planning stage and get weaving on what I'm going to do. So you see, the ten precepts actually telescope into these three. And these three, in the end, telescope into taking refuge in the eternal, refuge in the Buddha. Because you have to act, and you have to do it out of the best possible motive, which is, I believed myself to be doing the best possible thing. In other words, you have to really think about it before you do anything that's going to harm another. As I understand the third of these, do good for others, it is don't set up a chain of actions that's going to have a bunch of reactions that are going to harm other people. And do not set up something that other people can harm themselves with. The three pure precepts. It is easy to say, frequently easy to say, to get an answer to the first one, ceasing from evil. Am I ceasing from evil if I do this? Well, obviously, if you're really trying to do good, the answer is fairly certainly going to come up as yes. But there are times, you see, with the ten precepts, when you have to break one of them in order not to do more harm in another direction. I'm sure you can think of various examples offhand. On one occasion, for example, we had a drunk that turned up at the temple, very, very drunk. And he wanted to come in and meditate. And it is wrong to stop somebody meditating, but he wasn't capable of doing it in the state he was in, so the best thing was give him a place to sleep it off. That is not actually breaking a precept. It's ceasing from evil and doing only good and doing good for others. In other words, you can't get caught in the letter of a precept. You have to take it through the filter of these three. And when that's not terribly clear, then you literally have to take refuge in the eternal and do the very best you can, accepting the fact that you may make a bit of karma in doing it and not being afraid of it. One must not be made a coward of by karma. Very dangerous to be made a coward of. Also, you mustn't go at it like a bull at a gate and not bother to see if you're making karma. I have always had to, I've Well, the best examples I know of this was what happened during World War II. You obviously could not allow someone to go on killing people, whether he liked their religion or their lifestyle or not. You couldn't let that continue. So you had to break a precept to stop him, which has had incredible karmic results. I accept that we had to do that karma, and I'm very sad about it. That does not mean to say that I approve of it. I accept it because it had to be done. I didn't know of any other way, and neither did anybody else. You cannot allow so gross a breakage of the precepts. But you have to remember that in doing something, you too are breaking them, and there will be a consequence. And that is an attempt to cease from evil, do only good, and do good for others. You're going to get a wishy-washy answer on doing good for others, because which others are we talking about? But you are making a genuine attempt to do good and to cease from evil and to cause others to cease from evil. And then you have to argue, am I ceasing from evil in doing this? By helping others to cease from evil. And that one sometimes becomes a little wishy-washy, and then the only thing you can do is take refuge in the eternal. Keeping the precepts is a very responsible job. This is not a religion for spiritual children. This is definitely a religion for spiritual adults. Because responsibility comes at you at every moment. And it is your duty, if you are a parent, to have your child educated to the finest degree you can so that it will be able to make responsible and sensible choices when it is an adult. There's an old thing in Japan that you must give your child a better education than you yourself had. There is a responsibility to a teacher of monks to try and make his monks or her monks far finer than he or she ever was. For only in such a way can evil be vanquished and good prevail. There has to be this use of the will. And the use of the will comes very much into keeping the precepts. The use of the will along with responsibility. All the Buddhas have received and carefully preserved the above three precepts and three pure collective precepts and the 10 precepts. If you accept these precepts wholeheartedly, the highest enlightenment will be yours. And this is the undestroyable Buddhahood which we understood and which was understood and is understood in the past, present, and future. Is it possible that any truly wise person would refute the opportunity to attain to such heights? The Buddha has clearly pointed out to all living beings that whenever these precepts are truly accepted, Buddhahood is reached. Every person who accepts them becoming the true child of Buddha. How to become enlightened. To accept these and their responsibility completely and fully, living from this internal, eternal place. Internal, eternal place within oneself. Living there, working from there, checking with there everything one does, full responsibility, taking full responsibility for what one does, not shirking responsibility. This is to be Buddha, an iron being. This is to become Buddha. Not taking everybody else for granted, not taking the rest of the world for granted, not taking this as my right or that as my right. These things have been sacrificed to help you. And they are glad and happy to sacrifice to help you. And you must be glad and happy to help everybody else and be grateful for what has gone on for that sacrifice. And to be able to rejoice with other people's joy and not feel jealousy about it. To be overjoyed that they are enjoying and are happy. These are the signs that you are really working on you and recognizing that there is no difference between subject and object. All things, earth, trees, wooden posts, bricks, stones become Buddhas once this refuge is taken. From these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence, when the flames are fanned by the eternal. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening to true wisdom, the being still with the internal inside oneself. These are the signs. It follows that Buddhist, the equivalent of witchcraft in Christianity, the Buddhist equivalent of witchcraft to Christianity is Nazism. Any sort of separative superiority, I am human, you are not human, I am this, you are that. Anything that drives a wedge and causes others to think of another person or being as inferior is turning the wheel of the Buddhas and patriarchs in the wrong direction. The symbol of Buddhism has always been the wheel. In the East, it is what is popularly known over here as the swastika, which is called a manji. It is very interesting that Nazism chose the evil form of the manji as opposed to the good one. The good one goes forward, turns to the right. The evil one has its legs turning to the left. The left is always the way of evil. The right is always the way of good in Buddhist symbolism. Therefore, if you see someone wearing a manji or a swastika, have a good look at which way the legs go. Don't condemn him or her for wearing the manji until you've taken careful note as to which way they are going. The badge of a priest in Buddhism has always been the manji. This is my one. You note its legs go in a certain direction. It has a heart sitting in the middle of a lotus blossom in the center and small blossoms coming off of it all the way round. As it spins, it sends off the petals of the lotus and the perfume of the lotus from the center of the heart, which is the eternal. If it does not have that on it and is going in the opposite direction, I strongly advise you, unless you are interested in that sort of thing, to get out of the way. It is important you know this because it is the Buddhist symbol. There is nothing wrong with it, but it is sad and tragic that those who were practicing the exact opposite of Buddhist teaching chose that symbol and turned it in the wrong direction. If I could, I have often got a little mad, which is very bad for somebody who's supposed to have got as far as I have, about what Hitler did with my religious symbol, and I think I have the right to be mad about it, but you mustn't be because I'm giving you some wrong teaching. The fact remains, but just think how Christians would feel if he tipped the cross upside down, or Jews if he'd done something awful to the Star of David. anybody who takes somebody's symbol and insults it is insulting the three treasures. And I am already breaking the precepts by talking against somebody else, in whom I have to see the Buddha nature. Seeing the Buddha nature in Hitler for me was very difficult. I came to the conclusion that he was the Buddha who was showing me how not to behave, which was the only way I could handle it for a lot of years. I did not know what else to do, but I have to look at it positively or I will start doing harm. And you have to be able to take it that far in your own training. Now, brother, oops, what's the time on this thing? Eek, eek, eek. I've got four more paragraphs I must do. Oh dear. When one awakens to true wisdom, it means that one is willing to save all living things before one has actually saved oneself. Whether a being is a layman, priest, god, or man, enjoying pleasure or suffering pain, he should awaken this desire as quickly as possible. The point is that by trying to help everybody else, one automatically does help oneself. It frequently looks as though you are getting nothing. Don't worry about it. You can't see merit hanging in the air, but one day something happens which proves it was there. You shouldn't be doing it in any case to accrue merit. You should be doing it for the sake of doing it, because this is what the precepts teach. However humble a person may appear to be, if this desire has been awakened, he is always the teacher of all mankind. A little girl of 7 even may be the teacher of the 4 classes of Buddhists and the mother of true compassion to all living things. This was a revolutionary teaching in the 12th century, that a woman could make it. And a lot of Buddhists got very up the pole about this. But the fact remains that Dogen said it. The fact remains that it's true. The fact remains that he got it from his master, who was Chinese. And back down the line, it was got from Bodhidharma, who was Indian, which means that it was got from the Buddha himself. And it is very important for women to remember this and not be worried by it. Not fear that they cannot make it. I know they can. I'm one. That always helps. One of the greatest teachings of Buddhism is its insistence upon complete equality of the sexes. That is in 12th century Chinese. It's written in there. However much one may drift in the 6 worlds and the 4 existences, even they become a means for realizing the desire for Buddhahood once it has been awakened. And the awakening comes in that first few moments of the first kensho, the first little understanding, the first little glimpse. Once it has been awakened. But the amount of work you have to do after that awakening sometimes does make some people quail. Not often, but sometimes. However much time we may have wasted up to now, there is still time to awaken this desire. And however much time one wastes afterwards, one can still get the desire back. That's the other thing. Once you have found this place, you can always return to it if you want to. Therefore, it is said, if you turn away, it is a deliberate turning away once you've found it. It has to be deliberate, because all you have to do, no matter how much karma you may have accrued, all you have to do is sit down and just want to be one again with the eternal. Open yourself up and say, I'm willing. and you're back there. The willingness to be there is what matters. The wanting can be dangerous because that can turn itself into trying to storm heaven if you're not careful. And too many people try to storm heaven. You just have to be willing to say, here am I am willing. I want to be with the cosmic Buddha. I want to be one with the cosmic Buddha. I am willing. And the humility of the willingness is what makes it possible to immediately return. Although our own merit for Buddhahood may be full ripe, it is our bounden duty to use all this merit for the purpose of enlightening every living thing. To use our merit and our strength to help all people and all creatures. At all times there have been those who put their own Buddhahood second to the necessity of working for the good of all other living things. It's a slightly misleading statement. They put their own Buddhahood second. They actually don't. They don't worry about it. They don't just want to sit in meditation all the time and enjoy it, or just stay away from people who might cause arguments or require them to get into arguments. But that doesn't mean to say that they put their Buddhahood second. It merely means that they want everybody else to enjoy it with them. Yes?
I always thought of that as meaning that there comes a time in which you embrace all living things within your meditation rather than having your meditation with yours.
Yes, I agree with you. It's the not letting the thing be a personal, privately owned thing. It's having your hand in the water and everybody else going down with their hands in the water and all enjoying the water. Now, the four signs of enlightenment, the four wisdoms, these are the external, visible signs presented to the world by a person who has really found the eternal within himself. Charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy are the means we have of helping others and represent the aspirations of a bodhisattva. In other words, our attempts to be like aspects of the Buddha. If you remember, I explained the true meaning of the bodhisattva yesterday. A Buddhist saint is called an arahant. A bodhisattva is an aspect of a Buddha. Charity is the opposite of covetousness. We make offerings although we ourselves get nothing whatsoever. We may, actually, because later on he says that building a ferry or a bridge is an act of charity. Well, we may use the ferry and the bridge too. So we do get something out of it sometimes, but that is not the purpose for which it is built. It is to help everybody, not just us. Therefore, whether one does lecturing or whether one looks after children or whatever one does is an act of charity. That which benefits others is an act of charity. The word charity has got a lousy meaning in this present day and age, probably because people misunderstood it. In Buddhist terminology, it is an act that benefits and helps others. Not necessarily ourselves. It says, though we get nothing out of it, there isn't any act that we don't get something out of. But we don't do it for those reasons. There is no need to be concerned about how small the gift may be, so long as it brings true results. For even if it is only a single phrase or verse of teaching, it may be a seed to bring forth good fruit both now and hereafter. Am I ceasing from evil? Am I doing only good? Am I doing good for others? If it helps, then it is an act of charity. So the first sign, one of the first signs of the four great wisdoms, charity. Similarly, the offering of only one coin or a blade of grass can cause the arising of good, for the teaching itself is the true treasure, and the true treasure is the very teaching. We must never desire any reward, but we must always share everything we have with others. It is an act of charity to build a ferry or a bridge, and all forms of industry are charity if they benefit others. The important thing is not seeking a reward, but we may actually get one simply by the fact that we can use the ferry or the bridge. Don't think that you can't use such things that you have helped others with. Just don't make them your one and only possession. That would be like someone who has found the eternal and says, I'm going up a mountain and I'm never going to let anybody else know about it because I want to keep it to me. Then all that person will become is selfish and greedy, and it will cease to be good. In fact, it may very well become evil. I'm not saying it will, I'm saying it can. To behold all beings with the eye of compassion, i.e. to try and be as Kanzeon, and to speak kindly to them is the meaning of tenderness. If one would understand tenderness, one must speak to others whilst thinking that one loves all living things as if they were one's own children. By praising those who exhibit virtue and feeling sorry for those who do not, our enemies become our friends, and they who are our friends have their friendship strengthened. This is all through the power of tenderness. Whenever one speaks kindly to another, his face brightens and his heart is warmed. If a kind word be spoken in his absence, the impression will be a deep one. Tenderness can have a revolutionary impact upon the mind of man. So, giving, dana, one of the great things of Buddhism, being willing to give, although we seem to get nothing ourselves, is that which opens up compassion. And the sign of compassion, just as the sign of dana, giving, is charity, and we help everyone whilst helping ourselves, so the second sign of enlightenment is compassion, which is expressed in tenderness, and tenderness does not have to be weak or wishy-washy. Tenderness, the second. Benevolence is the third. Benevolence is the representative of Fugen, love, the sign of loveliness. If one creates wise ways of helping beings, whether they be in high places or low stations, one exhibits benevolence. No reward was sought by those who rescued the helpless tortoise and the sick sparrow. These acts being utterly benevolent. The stupid believe that they will lose something if they give help to others, but this is completely untrue, for benevolence helps everyone, including oneself, being a law of the universe. The sign of love, being willing to give help wherever necessary. Turn the stream of compassion within to find Kanzeon, to give forth help to those in need. Whether that be creating, making and stuffing zafus, which also provides money to help run a temple, that is a benevolent act. Or whether it is cooking lunch or cleaning the floor so that people do not become sick. All of these are signs of Fugen. Frequently people in monasteries do not realize that the work they are doing is the energy into which they put into the work they are doing is the measure of their understanding of Fugen. But that's what it is. anything that helps or benefits others are the signs of benevolence which come forth from love. If one can identify oneself with that which is not oneself, one can understand the true meaning of sympathy. Sympathy being the child of the Buddha, wisdom. You have giving, compassion, love, and wisdom. Being willing to give, you give everything in the darkness before you know the eternal. You begin to show the eternal when you turn the stream of compassion within, for then you are showing the aspect of Kanveon. When you become benevolent, creating wise ways of helping people who need help, then you are showing the Fugen, the love aspect of the Buddha. And in marrying these three together, you bring forth true sympathy, which is being able to identify with all things that are not yourself, but recognizing the Buddha nature in all of them. This is wisdom, the child of the Buddha. And this is what makes you the Buddha that is to come. So these four signs, charity, tenderness, benevolence, sympathy. If one can identify oneself with that which is not oneself, one can understand the true meaning of sympathy. Take, for example, the fact that the Buddha appeared in the human world in the form of a human being. Sympathy does not distinguish between oneself and others. He who knew the eternal always looked like a human being. He always appeared as an old monk. Always he carried his begging bowl, wore his robe, and shaved his head. He did not set himself up. He did not say, I am the one and only chosen. He said, all four classes of beings, whether they wish to be studying nothing but religion or whether they wish to be householders, are in the Sangha. They may know the eternal. He made this very clear. There are times when the self is infinite and times when it is true of others, when this is true of others. Sympathy is as the sea in that it never refuses any water from whatsoever source it may come. All waters may gather and form only one sea. Do not think that anything whatsoever is outside of this eternal. Sometimes we can see this clearly, sometimes not so clearly. When we cannot see it as clearly as we would like, then there is faith. And always there are the little moments that Suzuki Dissets used to speak of, the little moments that make one dance. When one's faith is a little weak, or one's tired or exhausted, always the little things that just shine at you and show you the Buddha nature in someone or something or some creature, and that renew you again, and the joy of the eternal springs up again inside you. That joy of the eternal is called the fountain of wisdom or the fountain of the Lord. One day, perhaps in the summer, I may talk more about that. O you seekers of enlightenment, meditate deeply upon these teachings and do not make light of them. Give respect and reverence to their merit, which brings blessing to all living things. Help all beings cross over to the other shore. The last chapter is solely about the gratitude that will well up and thunder out of you as a result of this state of living, and the joy that will live with you, and the certainty and the peace and the freedom from fear of life and death, all of these things come from finding the eternal within and listening to the teachings of the eternal, which are the three pure precepts, and taking refuge in the eternal, which is the true Sangha.